The Punt, William Hill's Top Flight Football Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Punt from William Hill. My name is Jack Critchley and I'm joined by two of the regulars, Dave Kellner and Derek McGovern. How are you both?
Very well, lads, very well. I'm still nursing the hangover of Wednesday night in Basel, of course, but other than that, all well.
Yeah, I'm good, thank you, Jack. What did you make to the performance, Derek? Because first half, it seemed inconceivable that Sevilla were going to get back into it, but Liverpool never got that second goal, and then in the second half, they were dominant, really.
Yeah, it was definitely a game of two halves, but that's what everyone says, but I'm sure I drank more than that. It was like the miracle of Istanbul in reverse, wasn't it? You know, Liverpool had an unbelievable second half in Istanbul, and it was just a tragic second half in Basel. They were awful. They just didn't show up. And, you know, all the quibbles about penalties and so on, they deserve to lose, basically. Sevilla were the better team.
And it's one of those situations, Derek, as well. I thought that in the post-match press conference, Jurgen Klopp spent 10-15 minutes talking to the press, and no one asked him what he said at half time. No one said, "What did you say at half time?" And it was just such a capitulation. I think Klopp's got all the mainstream press wrapped around his finger, because in the lead up to the match, no one even mentioned Sevilla. It was as if they weren't even part of the final.
Yeah. Oh, in the second half, it was Sevilla against Aston Villa. But you're right about that. They should have asked him. It was an obvious question given what was made of Rafa's half time speech in Istanbul. And one other thing you should mention here, you know, the Sevilla, you're right, everybody ignored them. And they've won it three times on the bounce now, a very, very tough competition just to get to the final in, as all English teams will tell you. They've won it three times. What about this manager? Why is he never mentioned when, you know, big jobs come up?
Yeah, Unai Emery, he's had an incredible spell, and I think people are starting to talk about him and link him with the Everton job, but he should be looking higher than that, really.
Yeah, too right. And, I mean, you know, people go on about what Rafa Benitez said at half-time, to turn round the unturnroundable. Well, he did the same, didn't he? He did the same. Whoever was going right for Liverpool, he negated the second half. I mean, you know, he seems to have been lost in all the Klopp mania afterwards. He's a tremendous performance by him second half.
And he sorted out the problem as well of Klein marauding down the right, so he'd clearly spotted a few of the problems that Sevilla were having in the first half.
Well, yeah, and the problem for Liverpool of Marino marauding down the left and forgetting that he has to defend.
Surely Klopp said at half-time, whatever you do, do not concede within 17 seconds of the restart.
That was it. I think that was his first instruction to the players, yeah.
He said within 15 seconds. Oh, they got there. They managed that. It's the 17th.
He was pleased with that. So shall we move on to the FA Cup final then, the small matter of the FA Cup final, kicking off Saturday afternoon at 5:30, Crystal Palace against Manchester United. Where do you see this one going, Derek?
Well, you know what? Unusually for me, with an FA Cup final hoving into view, I've got a strong opinion on this, and I think Palace are massively overpriced. I really do. I mean, I know they finished a mile behind Man United in the league, but they weren't trying from about Christmas. All that mattered to them was the FA Cup. I mean, they have been a surprise package of the FA Cup, and United can boast only a suspect package. But, I mean, you know, you look at the teams they've beat, they've probably been underdogs in all the rounds, apart from against Reading. You know, Southampton, Stoke, Tottenham. They beat them all and beat them well in the FA Cup. Man United had a couple of tough matches in later on against Everton, who they were lucky to beat, I thought, and also against West Ham, who again, lucky to beat. Was it a replay, I think it was? Before that, they'd met Shrewsbury, they'd met Derby, they'd met Sheffield United. And I don't think there's that much to choose between these two sides. Furthermore, I would say that Palace have more match winners in their team, with the likes of Bolasie, Zaha, Punchin even. I think these prices are massively, massively wrong. And I've got a sneaking feeling here that Palace will absorb whatever Man United can throw at them, which probably wouldn't be much, and then hit them on the break, because they've got the players to attack on the break, especially at Wembley. And you know what? Sometimes you get an instinct as a punter, and I've got a big instinct here for Palace. I'm almost tempted to go for them in 90 minutes, around about, 4-1, 9-2. But the 9-4 to win it at any stage, that'll do me. These prices are wrong. I'm telling you, they're wrong.
Yeah, well, 4-1 for Palace to win within 90 minutes. Without wishing to invoke painful memories, as we've already discussed as well, never write off a team that have had a bad end to the season when they're going for a specific competition, of course.
It is like that, and I kind of agree with Derek in terms of the prices. Manchester United do look underpriced 8-11. I'm trying to work out how this match will materialise, because the two league meetings between the sides, Palace didn't score. They drew 0-0 at Selhurst Park and were beaten 2-0 at Old Trafford. They've not beaten Manchester United since winning the League Cup in extra time, the League Cup match in extra time back in 2011. And I suppose a lot of people in the lead-up to this match, Derek, drawing parallels with the last time these two met in a cup final, which was Palace's only cup final, by the way, back in 1990. It saved Fergie's job, really, the replay, when Manchester United won 1-0 and it was a 3-3 draw after extra time. And I think the only way Louis van Gaal survives is if he wins this match. But there is suggestion, Derek, that if Louis van Gaal manages to get Manchester United across the line in this competition, he could be in line to, well, stave off execution for a further year anyway.
No, I don't think that will happen. I don't think an FA Cup will save his job. It looks all over by the shouting for him, doesn't it? Marino is lined up, it seems. And why would United keep a manager like Van Gaal when he got rid of David Moyes for roughly the same record? He's reached the FA Cup final. Big deal, you know, it's Manchester United, and the FA Cup ain't going to save his job. I think he'll go. You know, look, Punter's looking for a clue here. The last five times Man United have won the FA Cup, they've won it 2-0. And as Palace haven't scored against them in two fixes this season, and in fact didn't even get a shot on target in that 2-0 result at Old Trafford in April, you know, there's a point for punters there. But I think in the FA Cup, punters will look at history and know that a turn-up is always likely. In Man United's case, a late turn-up. And, you know, 3 years ago, Wigan beat Man City. I mean, that surely didn't happen. 2 years ago, Hull went 2 up against Arsenal. 1 year ago, Villa conceded only 4. I mean, turn-ups are likely here. And in fact, it won't be a turn-up in my eyes. I've got a strong, really, really fancy... You know what? I've got a couple of betting accounts I've been tugging along with since the turn of the year. It was my ambition to get them up to a couple of grand. And they're edging near there. Just sensible bets I've been having. No silly bets. And I'm thinking of putting it all on Palace to win the cup. That's how strong I fancy it. Really, really, I do. I've just got a feeling about this game.
I think you're right. They'll try and attack through Wilfried Zaha and Yannick Bolasie. Marouane Fellaini is coming back, which might not appear to be a big thing, but it is for Manchester United because they're so lightweight in midfield with Ander Herrera and Juan Mata joining Wayne Rooney and Anthony Martial attacking down the left. I think they need that option of Marouane Fellaini just to sit off Marcus Rashford, and I think that's what he'll do in this match. I think even though Fellaini's been out suspended, he'll slot straight back into this team and try and mix it physically, because if he doesn't play, they're lightweight in midfield. I'm just not sure. I like Manchester United to win 2-0. It looks a little bit skinny at 7-5 just looking at that price. I'd be with Anthony Martial to score in this game. I just think he's electric and he's the man for the big occasion. Not sure about the outrights, but Anthony Martial to score in the match is 23-10. Again, he was good midweek against Bournemouth, influential in that game. Everything went through him. And prior to that, he'd got 4 in his previous 3. I think that's a good price. I don't understand why Rooney and Rashford, albeit they scored midweek, are 6-4 each to score any time, where Anthony Martial, who is a bigger threat in my mind, even though he's cutting in from the left-hand side, is 23-10. This role that Rooney's playing now, withdrawn and deep in midfield, means that Anthony Martial is much more likely to score than Wayne Rooney, but he's a much, much bigger price here.
Rooney's trading off reputation there. I would have him more around the 9-4 mark. Derek, we've mentioned already Yannick Bolasie, Wilfried Zaha. Any Palace goal scorers that you like the look of?
Well, those two, definitely. Bolasie, I mean, he's just one of those players. I can't believe he's still at Palace. I thought all the big clubs would come calling for him. Maybe it was the injury he had around the turn of the year that stopped that. He'd be the number one threat. You can't rule out someone coming on late as sub, Dwight Gayle, for instance. And Puncheon, I like him. He takes free kicks. I think he's a very underrated player, Jason Puncheon. And I wouldn't put anybody off him. You know, another thing I meant to mention here about Man United, people have said a few times this season that they'll have a bad result and everybody's saying Van Gaal's out on his backside. And then when he needs to get a result, they'll get it in the next game from nowhere. But I disagree. Look at the three big matches they've had this season. They needed to beat Wolfsburg to keep their Champions League dream alive and lost. They needed to beat Liverpool to keep their Europa League dream alive and lost. Then they needed to beat West Ham to keep their top four dream alive and lost. They do a lot of dreaming. And this is the big game for Van Gaal now. They'll lose this too.
You're not going with an outright, are you? You're sticking with Anthony Martial, Dave.
I can't make my mind up on the outrights. I am being swayed. As the longer this podcast goes on, the more likely I am to log into an account and back Crystal Palace with...
One of Derek's?
Boo! Yeah, one of mine. There'll be none left in there come Saturday night anyway.
I think the prices, they obviously favour Manchester United heavily. And I am kind of leaning Crystal Palace at these odds right now, but I do like Anthony Martial. I think he is the man for the big occasion for Manchester United. If they've got a game winner in that team, it's him. So 23-10 for him to score any time would be my bet. I think it's a really good price.
Okay, well, you can also get 5-1 as well for the insure bet, two or more Anthony Martial, if you think he's going to have a superb game. So that's the FA Cup final. That's taking place at 5:30, as we said, on Saturday night, and all of the odds are on the William Hill website. Let's move on to international football. Are we feeling the end of season blues, or are we all geared towards Euro 2016 now?
Derek, do you like it, Euro 2016? Do you like these big international tournaments?
When I was a kid, I loved them. Couldn't wait. It was a big fear that I was going to die in a World Cup year. You know, you wait 3 years and then die when the World Cup's just at home and interview. But now they're easily missable. I can't remember a decent international tournament. They're always a bore.
I think they are in the group stages generally, and we had the reverse in the last World Cup, didn't we? But yeah, I quite enjoy them. But these friendlies, they take it from a betting perspective. I always find them to be difficult to judge, Jack, in all honesty. And I know Hodgson's announced his squad as well. So it's an intriguing point of the season. I am looking forward to Euro 2016. I think it'd be good.
One of us is, at least. So the squad has been announced. Derek, any surprises for you in there? I'm guessing I can probably preempt your answer here.
Well, no, I thought, to be honest, Jack Wilshere is the only one I would suggest, because he's kicked more habits than he's kicked footballs in the last few months. I mean, I don't understand how he's there. He played a couple of substitute appearances for Arsenal, and then did he start last week? I can't remember now. And then all of a sudden he's in the England squad after being out all season. How can he possibly be fit to play in an international tournament? It'll come home, you know, it'll backfire on England, that. He'll stay in the squad, obviously, because Hodgson loves him. But in my eyes, he shouldn't have been in the squad. And maybe you were mentioning Townsend. Is that what you were hinting at, being in the squad, Jack? Yeah. I think he's probably just about deserves it, really. You know, he almost helped Newcastle stay up. Didn't get much help from any of his teammates. And yeah, I wouldn't know, because I know Hodgson has always loved him as well. And he always sticks by players who've done it for him in qualifiers. And Hodgson had definitely done that. He's one of the rarities, isn't he, a fellow who turns it on at international level and maybe plays better than the international stage than he does at club stage. Rashford, obviously, is a big surprise. He shouldn't be in it, and he won't be in it. I mean, I noticed he was earlier this week, something like 1-8 with Hills to be axed, one of the three men axed, and I think he will be axed. I'm not too sure about the others. Delph, obviously, he shouldn't be in the squad. Fabian Delph, he's had to kick the ball.
I think everybody can agree that Delph should not be anywhere near the squad.
Yeah, he'll go. He'll be one of the three. But it's the third man. Who's going to be the third man axed? You ask 10 people and they'll come up with 10 different names. It's a tough one, that one.
Yeah, can I just give Dave Kellner the platform here by saying the words Mark Noble?
Yeah.
He loves Mark Noble, doesn't he?
I've been beating that drum throughout the course of the season, and as my dad always tells me, Derek, we've not won an international tournament without a West Ham player in the squad. And we've not got one this time either. I thought he might take a risk with Mikel Antonio, just because there's not much pace in that team. You look through, and people are saying, oh, Townsend shouldn't be in the squad, he should be axed. But if Roy Hodgson wants to play his 4-2-1-3-1, that sort of formation, 4-2-1-2-1 or whatever, where you play at a wide man or you play three in behind a striker, you need pace to do that. And that's why Danny Welbeck's injury is such a major cause for concern, because there's no natural wingers in the squad at all if you take Townsend away. So that's why I think Townsend will definitely go to Euro 2016 as part of the 23. I couldn't disagree more with Derek about Jack Wilshere either. Every time Jack Wilshere plays for England, he performs, and he's one of the best players. I think he's the most naturally gifted central midfielder we've got. And you look at some of the plodders in that squad, Derek, the likes of Jordan Henderson and James Milner, Danny Drinkwater, Fabian Delph. They're not going to change a game for you, are they? Those guys in midfield are not going to win a football match. At least Jack Wilshere has got something. He's got something extra that he can give England. He can provide them with that little bit of dynamite in midfield, whereas the others can't. So I think if he's fit, and if it is a huge if, because he's barely played any Premier League football, he will start in that 11 for Roy Hodgson. I would get rid of Jordan Henderson. I think he's had a shocker for Liverpool this season. I don't know what he brings to the squad. He was around about 100-30 not to go with the squad when we had betting on the William Hill website. I wouldn't take him. Those guys are plodders, aren't they, Derek?
Well, I was going to say to you that The big prices for the third man to be axed between Henderson, who, again, his fitness had to be taken on trust, and Milner. I think Milner's got a squeak of being the third man axed, because I don't think he brings anything different to what anybody else in that squad does. And he's had so many chances at England level and never really done anything. And I think he could go, you know. Hodgson likes Henderson. That's the only reason. I would think Henderson should be the third man to go, because he hasn't kicked it. He hasn't played enough football recently. But Hodgson does really like him. So I've got a sneaking feeling. I've just got a sneaking feeling that Milner might be the man to make way.
Okay, well, I know I'm not really supposed to take sides here as the middleman, as the presenter, but I'm going to have to go with Derek. I think Jack Wilshere should miss out. I've already got the image of him down, clutching his ankle, 27 minutes into the first game against Russia.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the only... I know that you obviously rate him very, very highly, Dave, but I've always thought he was a massively overrated player. This is Jack Wilshere picking up the ball, around the centre circle in his own half, looking up, firing a ball to Danny Welbeck or someone like that, head down, looking for the return that will never, ever come. You know, but it always looks good, players go for the 1-2, but at that kind of level, 1-2's never come off. He does it so often and he's caught out of position. I don't rate him. I'm sorry, don't rate him.
One thing worth noting, Derek, is I spoke to one of your colleagues, John Cross, from The Mirror yesterday, and he said that Danny Drinkwater has been quite candid in his interviews, and he seemingly already knows that he's not going to be one of the 23, which I found interesting. Even though England have got these three friendlies coming up in the lead up to Euro 2016, he said that Rashford, Delf and Drinkwater would be the three to miss out unless we have anything sensational happen in these three friendlies or there are any injuries. Yeah. So he reckoned that Drinkwater was going to miss out, and he was 7-4 here with William Hill not to go.
Oh, interesting.
And yeah, that was it. I found that interesting.
Yeah, well, that might have a dabble on that. But I mean, considering he's done so well for the title winners, you think he'd be a shoo-in for this squad. But I mean, we're coming up to getting to Turkey on Sunday, and everybody knows when it comes to Turkey, you don't drink water. I'll forget. Edit that one out.
That one stays in, Derek, I think.
You know, that's an interesting point, Dad. If John Cross has obviously spoken to Drinkwater.
Yeah, he has spoken to him a couple of times, and I've not heard his interviews with him, but in his interviews he said that Drinkwater almost knew that he wasn't going to be part of that 23.
Too similar to Dyer?
Maybe so, but there's not much cover for Dyer, is there, if Henderson's not fully fit? I think there's a feeling that N'Golo Kanté just carried Danny Drinkwater for the majority of the season, but he has been in that championship winning side and has definitely played his part. And a lot of people as well reckon that Drinkwater might be taken just as sort of to accompany Jamie Vardy, so Jamie Vardy doesn't feel left out in terms of not being able to
stop him partying.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. Just keep him under control, basically.
Yeah. Before we move on to the England-Turkey match, quick Jack Wilshere question for you, Dave. If Jack Wilshere played for West Ham, would he be and had played the same amount of minutes this season, would he be in consideration?
No, probably not. That's a fair point. That is a fair point. He's not played much football, but I think he's there in terms of on credit because of his previous performances for England. The last seven times he's played for England, he's been man of the match on six occasions. And Hodgson does love him. There's no doubt about it. If he's fit, I think he'll start in the 11. And I just believe that he's the one in midfield with that technical ability that the others don't have.
Okay. That was a very quick answer, actually. I was expecting a bit more of a debate, but I'm happy to move on to England-Turkey. England priced at 4-9, Turkey 7-1, the draw 16-5. These are friendlies. We know anything could happen. There could be 11 changes at half-time, and let's face it, there probably will be. Derek, are Turkey overpriced at 7-1?
Yes, they are. Firstly, I mean, they're in New York. Let's not forget they've qualified for the Euros, and that's a puzzle, that, because 95% of Turkey is in Asia. And right now, about 95% of Asia is in Turkey.
Australia are in the Eurovision.
Yes, exactly. And that's one of the other one of England's friendlies coming up, isn't it? Turkey, Portugal and Australia. Turkey and Portugal somehow qualify for Euros and Australia somehow qualify for the Eurovision. How does that work out? Chances are our lads will do as badly in one as they did in the other. I think they are overpriced because when you look at Turkey, you think, well, put them on a par with Greece, who we all know are a joke. But they qualified for the Euros, qualified well, and in their last six matches, they've won five of them against, you know, reasonably decent sides, Austria, Sweden. You know, are they that much better than England? I think they're overpriced here, I really do. And you could argue that England manager Roy Hodgson might well given that it's been a long season for players, he might wrap some of his bigger players in cotton wool. Turkeys will be in bako foil, I think. I think there's a big overreaction here to England's price. I think they're way too short. Why on earth would you back an odds on Polk in a friendly? It's absolute madness. I keep saying the draw is a big player in these kind of matches, but I'm going to give Turkey a squeak here because of their recent form. They've been winning well recently.
OK, Turkey as well, if you want to look on the match handicaps, plus a goal, 17-10 for Turkey. Doesn't look the worst option there. We move on to the goalscorer markets. Now, as you've already alluded to, these are very hard to call because we don't know who is going to play. But Harry Kane surely would get a start, and he leads the market at 6-5 any time.
Yeah, I think as far as the match is concerned, I think Derek's got it spot on. Turkey, they're no mugs. I actually think they're lively outsiders for Euro 2016 Turkey. I think they've got a fantastic starting 11, and even though they are without a couple of key players, and that's going to be crucial for Turkey's chances in this match, because Arda Turan, who is their star man, he'll be involved in Barcelona's Copa del Rey final against Sevilla, and Yuri Sahin will play in the German Cup final for Borussia Dortmund against Bayern Munich as well. They do have Burak Yilmaz. He should be in their team. I'm looking down the goal scorers and he's not there, so whether or not he plays or not, but he should be available. He could cause some problems for England. He's scored 4 in his last 5 international appearances in 2015. Definitely crucial in their qualifying campaign as well. Plays for Galatasaray, and Burak Yilmaz could be a threat. But England are going to be without key personnel here. You mentioned Harry Kane. I think he will start, and 6-5 is a fair price for him to score any time. But given Manchester United are in the FA Cup final, he's going to be without Wayne Rooney, Chris Smalling, and he's not going to get a look at Marcus Rashford in this game either. And those players that played on Wednesday night for Liverpool will be rested. So you wouldn't expect to see a team with Adam Lallana, Jordan Henderson, Nathaniel Clyne or Daniel Sturridge play on Sunday afternoon. So that leaves them a little bit short. Up front, they've still got Harry Kane and Jamie Vardy. And I think given the squad he selected, he'll go with that diamond formation in midfield with Eric Dier sitting at the base of the diamond, Dele Alli at the top of the diamond, and then he'll experiment in midfield, maybe with Danny Drinkwater playing there, and play Vardy and Kane. And hopefully Vardy and Kane will click up front, because I think given the lack of pace in this squad, it's more than likely Hodgson's going to have to deploy that diamond, where I think he'd rather have 3 in behind Kane up front. So England are just too short here at 4-9. The one thing worth noting, though, is Turkey have played England 10 times in international competition, never scored a goal against England.
Right, OK, I was going to bring you on to this point, and I'll ask Derek this question as well. I don't trust the England defence, Derek. So is 11-8 for both teams to score a good price here?
Yeah, I would suggest it is. Yeah, what you mentioned there—that stat about Turkey never scoring against England. Yeah, it's, you know, you've got to take notice of it. But I'm not a big fan of recent results. When you could have been talking about matches 30 years ago, 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
It shouldn't really matter a hill of beans. Yeah, England's defence is woeful. There's no doubt about it. And I would be surprised to see both teams to score. In fact, I'm surprised it's 11-8.
Both teams to score, no, is 8-15, which seems ridiculously
short.
That's
way too short.
It feels like England are playing San Marino the way they've been priced up here.
Yeah, they've been slightly shorter against San Marino, I think. But yeah, I get your point. I think they are definitely underpriced, England. It'll be a good test for England as well, because it's worth noting that the Turkish manager, Fatih Terim, he's not announced his squad yet. So the Turkey players actually have something to play for here, whereas England have announced that provisional squad of 26. So they know only three of their players are getting trimmed, whereas Turkey, all these players come into this not knowing whether they're on the fringes or going to be in the squad. So they've got actual incentive to perform here, whereas England's starting 11, they'll be in the back of their mind thinking, don't get injured, don't get injured, don't get injured. So any 50-50s, Turkey are going to be going in a lot stronger. I like Turkey. I like the draw here. I think it's going to end in a draw. 16-5 the draw. And I do think both teams will score. I got a good team of attacking talent, Turkey. Both teams to score in the draw, 9-2. I couldn't see this ending 2-2 at 25-1. I think it will be quite entertaining. You look at England's most recent matches, seeing over 2.5 priced at, I think it was around about 11-10 over 2.5 goals.
Turkey to score, Derek. Just Turkey to score, yes. Even money.
Yeah, it does look big, doesn't it? I mean, England's defence doesn't convince anybody.
And there's no Chris Smalling, of course, as you mentioned. He's in FA Cup action. Any goal scorers, that apart from Harry Kane, who we've already mentioned?
Well, do you reckon if Vardy will be playing? Kane and Vardy, that's what they're saying in the paper today. Yeah. He's just a sensational player, Vardy. I wouldn't be surprised to see him get on the score sheet. And he's a bigger price than Kane, too.
Any weight in the theory that Dele Alli will be raring to go after missing the end of the season? And he could be a play at 7-4 any time?
I don't see him as a natural goal scorer, though. I think if you compare his price at 7-4 to Vardy and Kane at 6-5 apiece, I'd much rather take Vardy or Kane at 6-5. I see Dele Alli as provider. I think he will play in that number 10 role, particularly on Sunday, given the absence of Wayne Rooney. I think from what Hodgson's been saying in the lead-up to this match and in the press following his squad announcement, he still sees Wayne Rooney as a number 10 rather than a player that's going to sit deep in midfield like he has been for Manchester United recently. So Dele Alli's inclusion at number 10 for this match will be intriguing because he'll be able to compare Alli at number 10 to what he's seen at number 10 from Rooney in the past. But I see Alli as more provider. I think you've got to go with, you've got to take your pick of the big two there, Kane and Vardy. And as Derek mentioned, as has been hinted, he's going to go with those two up top. And if they perform well together, I can see that being the starting partnership for the first game against Russia in Euro 2016.
I like that partnership. You've got Harry Kane, who can pretty much create an opportunity out of nothing, score from distance as well, and Jamie Vardy, who will run and run and run and tire defences out. So I think 6-5 apiece. Do you agree, Derek, that 6-5 for either one?
Yeah, I suppose so. Instinctively, I thought Vardy would be a bigger price than Kane because Kane seems to be the beloved one. But yeah, both as likely as each other to score, I would suggest.
OK, well, that's England against Turkey, which is on Sunday evening. It's at 5:30. And as we said, England, we believe, woefully underpriced. So thank you very much for your company, Derek, and thank you, Dave. All of the prices available on the William Hill website and all of the podcasts as well across a range of sports are available on the news page of the William Hill website. You can find Derek at BetLikeAPro on Twitter. And are you at Dave Kellner?
I'm at D Kellner. Saving all those characters.
Yeah, don't go contacting other Dave Kellners. Don't go bothering them. Thank you very much, and we'll be back again soon.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.